Why do I think Paul and Jesus invented the correct method for ending class and inviting in our global freedom to be confirmed and reinforced by our designing it according to their guidance? Particularly, why would I say this when we hear Paul say, quote, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? That is, if you want to have no fear of rulers, do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, that is, not because you might be punished, but only for conscience's sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor," unquote. Upon reflection, I don't think that this is a case of Paul not having escaped the trap of class conditioning, the sin in him, though who among us born into it has? Or a matter of it being early days yet in Paul's mission, that it will be 20 years more before the state kills him? Or that this innovative form of resistance that Jesus invented, decommissioning, is so fresh in its development? Or that we've come a long way with the strategy of decommissioning hate, the state, today? But that rather, and I was about to say that Proudhon is right, and of course he is, a mistake was made, but not the one of which Paul writes, the stumbling stone that caught the foot of the Israelites, that power strayed from righteousness by deifying the works of the mind. Quote from our January 21st, 2018 show. This is quoting Paul. What shall we say then? That the Gentiles, which followed not after righteousness, have attained to righteousness, even the righteousness which is of faith? But Israel, which followed after the law of righteousness, hath not attained to the law of righteousness? Wherefore, because they sought it not by faith, but as it were by the works of the law, for they stumbled at that stumbling stone. As it is written, behold, I lay in Zion a stumbling stone and rock of offense, and whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed. Unquote. But rather, I think we should consider that a mistake was made in the attempt to solve Socrates' dilemma. And this is going to be a quote from Karl Popper, originally from our October 6, 2013 show, but repeated again, this quote, in our October 8, 2017 show. And this is quoting The Open Society and Its Enemies, The Spell of Plato, from the chapter The Principle of Leadership. Quote, but this moral intellectualism of Socrates is a two-edged sword. It has its equalitarian and democratic aspect, which was later developed by Antisthenes, but it also has an aspect which may give rise to strongly anti-democratic tendencies. Its stress upon the need for enlightenment, for education, might easily be misinterpreted as a demand for authoritarianism. This is connected with a question which seems to have puzzled Socrates a great deal, that those who are not sufficiently educated and thus not wise enough to know their deficiencies are just those who are in the greatest need of education. Readiness to learn in itself proves the possession of wisdom. In fact, all the wisdom claimed by Socrates for himself, for he who is ready to learn knows how little he knows. Unquote. A mistake made in the attempt to solve this dilemma an attempt that expanded the problem of class exponentially, prophecy rising, the perfect will of God. Quote from Proudhon, "Whoever admits the infallibility of a man thereby becomes incapable of instructing others. Whoever denies his own reason will soon prescribe free thought." Although, who could deny it? We needed Alice to decommission 10,000 years of class. By which I mean we needed Alice for us to get that those trained to be sadists, those who believe they are entitled to be rulers of the rest of us, are stuck in a repetition compulsion. That their soul's growth has been interrupted because their frozen feelings led to frozen thought development. And indeed, rulers may not have been so uniformly so in Paul's day, as the system of poisonous pedagogy that Alice explains is a conscious strategy of only systematized in fairly recent days. The work of decommissioning class today, as we implement it, has the benefit of Alice. But even some of us today who do have Alice have a difficult time being Paul. That is to say, to give place unto wrath, to not allow anger a place in us. What Paul has achieved, he doesn't believe is beyond the rest of us. Quote, "As God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith," unquote. And then he says, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." Unquote. Decommissioning the state means we understand and honor the infinite as the source of our gifts and subject ourselves only to love, not to any man-made institution, only to the truth, the law of love, which is why Prince tossed away his crown in the everlasting now in the Rainbow Children. I think we are merging all three of the issues we left hanging in discussing decommissioning, which discussion itself encompasses the big question, what is the perfect will of God? How then to interpret these lines of Paul's, "For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? If you want to have no fear of rulers, do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, not because we might be punished, but only for conscience sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing." What do we make of these lines of Paul's? The concepts of punishment, and we find among the words of Jesus, "Those who refuse love as their ruler shall go away into everlasting punishment, while the righteous into life eternal." The concepts of punishment and rule, which we can see as a continuation of the even more ancient prophetic tradition of command standing as authority over the children, intimately tied with the whys of frozen feelings, are at the core of class and explain our need of Alice and Proudhon, who together show us their basis in our nature of growth continuous. So while there is an eternal, the infinite, the soul's energy lives on. On this we agree with Nicola and Prince, and all our sexumvirate, punishment or correction or force, an error, a faulty notion for how to wake up the class anesthetized to get their bodies moving and thereby shake awake their minds. An attempt to solve Socrates' dilemma did the opposite, interrupted our thought process and began the repetition compulsion, and ultimately expanded the problem of class to encompass the world. The perfect will of God interprints to help realize it with a new translation that abhors force, abjures coercion, elevates affection.